Hi, and welcome to the G&J Show. I'm Gerhard.
And I'm Joss. As married couples, we all want strong marriages and healthy families. But what can we do to be that couple and family we've always dreamed to be?
Our show is dedicated to helping you improve your marriage, strengthen your family, and encourage you to live your best life.
We discuss practical resources and books and have conversations with other couples to find winning strategies and methods for your marriage and family.
Today, we sit down and have a conversation with Adrian Penville, Jocelyn's brother-in-law, who is a sanguine choleric. And we have a conversation with him about his primary temperament, being a sanguine, which actually he shares with myself. All right, let's dive in.
Yeah, it's very interesting. Even though the test came out equal for phlegmatic and choleric, when I was going through the book, he said, "Oh, it sounds more choleric." So maybe it's just the way the test was done. Just a simple 8-question thing. Right? Could have probably done better. But
like, which one do you think was more accurate, the one in the book or the one that you did online for yourself? Like when you saw the results.
Probably the book. Just going through what the book explains on the personality, but also on, this is how a sanguine lives in harmony with a melancholic and vice versa. It's like, oh, that's us. That's me. So, that's where it kind of clicked. Okay, no, that sounds more like us.
It always a nice confirmation. So yeah. I remember when we first started looking more into it quite a ways back. We were looking at the book, The Temperament God Gave Your Spouse. And in there they show temperament pairings and how this would manifest itself in family life once families grow. And it was accurate. Like, it was very accurate.
Officially accurate.
And then we read the one for our temperament combination. I thought it was awesome, and Jocelyn was having like a panic attack.
But I got a little bit nervous.
More than a little nervous.
It was like, my life is going to be wild. I'll never have quiet again.
So far, it's been true.
Kind of. How did you feel about when you saw like what your temperament combination would bring, say, to your family life?
Oh, man. Oh, the initial reaction back when we lasted it like a while ago was, I must have just been accepting, I guess. I obviously, as a sanguine, you're more adaptive, and you're looking forward to like, oh yeah, this is gonna be fun. But it's good to take out the book again from time to time and just look at it, and just like I was mentioning Mario's and I looking at this evening. It's really good to just go through it one last time. It's like, oh yeah, this sounds like us. And then go through again the recommendations that the book offers. Like, okay, yeah, well, if you're sanguine, you should, and your wife is melancholic, well, you know that this is how there's going to be balance, but you know you're going to say some things and they're not going to be able to pick her up in her times of feeling low or having to deal with unpleasant situations. And it's good. It's a good reminder for sure, right? So it's like that book, For Him Only, For Her Only. I cannot remember the author.
And Jeff Feltham. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, the Feltham's. Yeah, they were. There was another great book that really helps with really placing yourself back. And it's always good to have a little review here and there.
Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. We feel the same way because we read this. It also makes a difference too, like when in your life you read it, because we read the temperaments like way back when we were single people, and then reading it again as a married couple. And when we were preparing for our first podcast, which would have been a year ago now, on this topic, where like I was kind of blown away. Like for me, it was a moment of realizing that, oh wow, like I put my choleric temperament aside, and I started reflecting on that, seeing why did I do that? And because I felt like some of those qualities or my temperament just weren't applicable to marriage. This is like cholerics are very naturally independent and aggressive. It's like, this doesn't work as a mom. So I'm just going to like forget about those parts of myself. And then when we had the discussion, Garrett challenged me. It's like, no, bring that back. And I was like, I don't know how to bring it back without being destructive. So I don't know if you feel similar, like too, because you have the choleric side too. But I think, I don't know, maybe like I can see you putting your choleric self like into like your projects and like your kind of ambitions. Like you have lots of ideas, and I guess that's a bit of this choleric and a sanguine too.
Huge, huge. And that's definitely knowing our differences. I have to really slow my projects, say, okay, I'd like to do this, and so tell her, and like, well, I could see some resistance, even though she's trying to be really nice and say, well, you know, I support you in everything that you do, but it's like you're taking on a lot of things. Are we going to see you this week, this month, this year? it's definitely, definitely harder on that side. And that's probably where would I say that the relationship suffered in that aspect? I don't think so, but I can see sometimes the strain that it puts for sure with the everything that I'm trying to do. Like I try to be as, I try to return the favor by saying, yes, go to your mom's group, go for your reflection morning and your mass and, with her lady friends. And, but she gets 2 days a month, and I think I have like 7 days where I have recurring meetings. And that plus going to work. So that does, it does put a little bit of strain, and I definitely need to remind myself to slow down and take my time and just take one thing, one project at a time. So
I guess that's how she's helping you, like with your blind side, because you said you're zero melancholic. So like I don't know if you can say like you organize your thoughts differently. I guess that might be like, I know Gary and I've had this discussion where it's like he forgets what it, like he just forgets things. Like, and for me, it's like, I have it kind of like logically listed in my brain, and like, I don't know. I feel like he contains his thoughts differently than I do. I don't know. I feel like that's part of it. I don't know if I'm going on a bit of a tangent, but I think like it, like sometimes I just remind Gerhard of things that he forgets.
Usually because I don't think they're important. if it's not a priority to me, I don't see this being a priority. There's no incentive for me to store it. So it just goes in one ear out the other and then I move on with my life.
Like even things like Garrett likes. Sure. So, like it's not even just bad things. It's like sometimes it's like Garrett, like you like cycling. So just get on your bike and then you'll remember that you like it. And then he'll like get on his bike and be like, oh yeah, I love doing this.
Yeah. It's just in the process, I got distracted by other fun things. And we kind of went down the rabbit trail with those fun things. And it's like, oh yeah, I forgot that. Let's get back to that one. Then I'll run down that rabbit trail a little bit, then get distracted again. And yeah, it keeps life exciting.
Yeah. One thing definitely that I find helps is as someone who's very outgoing, I communicate a lot. I talk a lot. One thing that really places us in our relationship is, okay, hey, honey, I want to do this. And with this, we're going to do this. And then with that, we're going to, and then she's going to be like, whoa. Just wait, Adrian. Okay. What about this? You're forgetting about this. Like, oh, right. Darn, I forgot about that. Okay, well, what if we do it this way? It's like, oh, no, that doesn't work. But it's, anyways, what I'm trying to say is just by bringing it up often, she puts me back in my place and say, well, slow down, you know, this. We can definitely try to make this work, but there's going to be downsides to this, and to go through everything, all the pros and cons of
the every, details.
The details, situation, the timing, the okay, well, You go to the grocery store at 10 a.m. and then I'll have lunch ready around that time. And then as soon as lunch is done, you're good. And now I can scoot off this way and then we can all make it work. But ultimately, it's definitely the communication aspect is how it seems to fit in place. I mean, we're approaching 10 years of marriage. So,
wow.
So far, so good.
Yeah, that's good. We're coming up on 5, so we're only halfway halfway to where you are. There. You mentioned a couple of things. I have a list of adjectives here that I took out from. So we're talking about Art and Lorraine Bennett's book, The Temperament God Gave You. And I just pulled out some adjectives from it that describe the sanguine. And I'll just list them off for you because you mentioned some of them already. And so I just want to see like which ones stand out to you and what you think about them. So here's the first: fun-loving, friendly, mm-hmm. communicator, as you mentioned,
yes.
creative problem solver, yes. respects freedom, mm-hmm. careless spender, overloads schedule.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just watching your face as I say this.
Guilty as charged.
Lighthearted.
Yeah.
Overambitious.
Quite often.
Impulsive. Distractible. Yes. Mm-hmm. Flighty. Mm-hmm. Scatterbrained. Immature. You don't have to comment. Superficial. Cheerleader. Yeah. Optimistic, spontaneous, and adventurous. Here we go.
Yeah. Oh, there's definitely, I think the fifth one from the last one. Remind me which
okay,
one
here,
that was.
I can.
Just the last like five or so. So there was one that, superficial.
Superficial.
Maybe. Yeah, I could see. No, I'm not exactly the type of person to analyze things in a very deep way until I really have to physically stop myself and think about. As an impulsive person, it's definitely a aspect of my life that I'm working on for sure. Yeah.
Well, I find it interesting that like you even agree in some ways that you are, say, superficial. And I know you're not superficial in the sense of like you're like a, how do I say, a flighty kind of person, although you do fly. Dando. what I mean is that like you did the International Baccalaureate program in high school. So by superficial doesn't mean that you're not an intellectual kind of person. Even you too, Gerhard. Like I wouldn't call you a non-intellectual person. Like you're both people who like to go deep into a subject, but like maybe so many subjects. Maybe that's what I would say.
Or we go deep on a subject for a short period of time, and then we find something else exciting, and we do that next. Like I think it might be harder for our temperaments. So like stick with one thing and just grind it out to, I'm going to get my PhD in whatever. I don't know. I think at least for me in my experience is like, I'll go deep on one thing and then I'll hit a certain point where it's like, okay, I got this. I figured it out. I want to move on to something different now and then shift. And I might go back to that in time, but yeah.
Yeah. Do you sometimes get the impression you're every week you're getting a new idea, a new project, a new thing you want to learn, and then in these age of smartphones, go quick, let's read a whole bunch of stuff about this, but it has like absolutely no effect on the rest of your life and you have absolutely nothing. I see you guys smiling right on video. I'm heading somewhere.
Josh was answering for me. Guilty as charged.
Okay.
Yeah, like I don't know. I get interested in something where it catches my eye, or like, I want to learn this, and then I'll try to go and become an expert in the subject in like 10 minutes.
Like we'll be having a conversation, and then we'll be like, oh yeah, I don't know about that. And then be like right away, he's on his phone, like looking up something about it and like trying to learn about it. Like and like it's cool, like very curious person. But it's like, it also, like, for me, like, the negative side of that is, like, a lot of time on the phone. Because, like, it's just, like, that, like, yeah. It's just, like, one thing. It's like, Gareth's, like, I go down a rabbit hole. I don't know if you use that expression yourself. Like,
yeah.
He starts with one thing and then leads to another thing. And it's just, like, he loses track of time and
space. And yeah. Reality. Yeah.
How about, Adrian, can you identify with that?
Oh, definitely. It's like,
yeah, you know, What happened to this? I'm trying to think. Last week we were watching a series called Wartime Farm on BBC. You can watch it on YouTube. Very interesting about how farmers were doing, were coping with World War II. And they had mentioned about the ship that it was a German ship that was attacking merchant shipping and causing all this problem in the UK. And find myself, okay, well, this is interesting, but I'm just going to scoot over on my phone and read all about the Wikipedia page for that very ship for the next 2 minutes and miss what's on the show. And it's like, oh, darn. What did he say?
Yeah. Pass. What are we watching again?
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, the rabbit hole.
With some of your projects, though, like, for example, with permaculture, that's remained an interest for you. Like, some things do stick, like you too, Gare. Like
yeah, for me, it's cycling and fitness and health and exercise. Like, that one's been a constant since high school for me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just because we're flighty doesn't mean that we're totally flighty. It's just like we have our...
I didn't say flighty. I said you're like...
we have our core, let's say our core interests or core values. That we like, you know, we plant the flag in the ground, but then everything else kind of floats in and out.
Yeah.
Yeah. How about you, Garrett? Did any of those adjectives stand out to you as like something that you weren't sure or that you really strongly identify with?
I think like definitely overloading the schedule is one that I do to myself quite a lot.
Yeah, let's talk about that because you use that in a productive way though too.
Yeah, for me, I've learned how to use that in a productive way, but at the same time, like I still catch myself, whether it's at work or school or like doing freelance stuff. It's like, yeah, we can do this, that, the other thing. Like in relation,
okay, here's an example. When we were dating, you were like, let's do a day trip to Ottawa, and then. And we were just going to go to Ottawa and back, right? And then so you planned like so many things. We were going to go skiing. We're going to go skating on the canal. We were going to go like to a restaurant. We were going to go visit my friend. It was like we didn't have time to do all those things. Like it's like in a good way. It's like kind of like overly optimistic.
Yeah. I mean, in the completely unreality of my mind, I thought that it would work, but it just didn't. However, like going back to that one, I have learned that I'm most productive, most effective, and also I get the most energy if I do like slightly overload my schedule, because then if it helps me stay on task, knowing that like, okay, I've got a lot of stuff to do, so I've got to do it and buckle down and not like if I don't have a lot to do or I know like, yeah, I have this one thing to do, but realistically it'll take me like 2 hours and I've got 8 hours today. I'll do it in the last 2 hours of the day. And that last 2 hours is like, okay, I'm going to stay up a little late to do it. And then like, oh, YouTube's exciting. And then like 4 a.m, it's like, I should probably do this. So yeah definitely had.
Does that sound true to you?
Oh, definitely. Excuse me. Just as a, I think in that respect, I seem to be doing a lot better if I'm pushing back all my projects to the last few hours of the day, as Gerhard mentioned, if it's a physical activity. But by having just so many things that I got to think about, if it's more of a mental exercise, for example, I had this meeting a week ago
And my job is to, after this meeting, to contact five different people with ideas as to how we can go about, we'll say, organizing the Earth Day event, which is supposed to be tomorrow. For example, and whenever there's a bit of thinking involved, I think the sanguine mind just takes over, and that is absolute wreckage on your on all your plans and your ability to think. And I seem to be thinking a lot more about what I need to do and then the mental aspect of all my projects at that exact moment that I'm either in a meeting or that I'm actually doing something physical. So definitely the physical activity and the actual moving the muscles seems to be helping with the placing, you know, bringing you back to earth and say, okay, well, how do I concentrate on doing a good job here? And how do I concentrate on doing a good job at this other time? I don't know. Is that something that you've experienced, Gerhardt, or?
Yeah, I think for me, there's also a fairly strong connection between like physical engagement with what I'm doing and like ability to stay on task. My work is a lot in front of a computer, and it's pretty easy for me. Like I can, if I really buckle down, I can definitely get in the zone and get like a lot of focused work done. But I for tasks that require me to be mobile, move around, like even if it's just a walk from one place to the next, talk to different people, I'm definitely much more engaged with what I'm doing than the time. Like it's so easy to get distracted if I'm just sitting down, not doing any, like not physically working, or like not physically needing to be too involved with my work. So it's just something that I wish I could do a little bit more of right now, but then I compensate with that by like, you know, getting up from my desk, taking walks, chatting with people, taking breaks.
Yeah.
So
sometimes making lists helps a lot.
It doesn't help me at all.
No? Okay.
Well, I'll make lists and sometimes they're helpful, but more often than not, it's like I'll make the list and then leave it somewhere and just like go do something totally different.
But he'll follow the list if I make the list, though, which is really interesting.
Ooh.
Yeah, because she beats me up if I don't follow it.
No. No, it's because we're doing it together. So it's like, this is our list. And because he sees, like, this is our list, and he gets competitive. Like, how many things can I check off before Dawson checks them off? Like, I think that also goes, I don't know if that's accurate. But it's almost like, oh, I'm going to do this, Joss is going to do that. And like, he totally goes for the list if I make the list, but yeah, you don't really make them for yourself.
No, I've learned that for myself, they're kind of useless. I bought so many agendas and schedulers like growing up that at a certain point it's like, this doesn't work for me, screw it. Like, done. And I've also know other people who like, particularly in a work setting, would schedule like from the moment they walk into the door of the office all the way through to like 10 o'clock at night, or like people who have like their Google calendar tells them what to do, like from the moment they wake up to the moment they go to sleep. And I don't know, for me, that just gives me anxiety. So like from a scheduling standpoint, I like scheduling in like the big tasks. Okay. I know I need to get this done today. I know I need to get that done, this done today, leave lots of like open space and just do what needs to get done. I think that also like I'm, work well under pressure. So I think by not scheduling absolutely everything, there's kind of a constant state of pressure because I'm always kind of last minute on things.
Fair enough.
So that just works for me.
It kind of makes me think of one of the descriptors here for the sanguine of somebody who loves their freedom. So do you find a schedule or a list constraining? Is that the idea? Like,
just more of an urge to put on blue face paint and a kilt and go running around.
So Adrian, how long have you been using the list? Or is that like a new thing? Or is that something you've always been able to use? Or is that maybe kind of like, you said you're pretty balanced with cholerics. So cholerics like do like to accomplish goals. I'm just pretty goal-oriented.
Yeah, it's something that keeps on coming back in and out into my life. usually when I start using the list, I have it's crunch time. It's the time I really need to do a lot of things, and I know that I'll just end up forgetting one thing. Usually, the most important or the one or the items that I don't want to do at all, which quite often coincide to be the exact same thing. And, while I might make a list of 5, 10, 15 items that I need to do in the next couple of days, and I'll maybe put the most important item as number one, I will probably, because of my sanguine personality, do all the other 14 items before I get to that very important. I don't know. It's
just to prove that you're a free man.
Maybe, yeah. It's got to be that. It doesn't give me a certain sense of accomplishment. I'm not leaving it to the last item just because, like, now it's done. Sometimes there's things that you know you need to do, but you are loath to do them, and that's probably part of the freedom loving, the flighty part of the personalities. You definitely want to do other things and
anything that's possibly more fun than that one.
Well, exactly right. You need to call your farmer friend down the road to ask for eggs. Well, that's totally less important than filing your taxes, but you know.
Priorities.
Yeah, exactly.
But the point is that you get things done, right?
Yeah.
Like you have a farm that you run, and you do a lot of things. Like, I mean, even though you have a full-time job, pilot, I mean, you're not gone every day, but you're gone, you know, here and there. You've got kind of a crazy schedule. You don't have a 9-to-5.
No, so, that's
like,
it.
I don't know if that's kind of like you've got that spontaneity built into your life.
Yeah, exactly. I have a slight idea rather good idea what my days off, but I just try to schedule my days off along with some recurrent meetings. So like first Tuesday of the month, third Wednesday of the month, okay, boom, those are days off. And while, okay, yeah, it's theoretically it's supposed to be a day that I'm supposed to be home, relaxing, spend time with family, I have a tendency, and that is to a fault, sometimes to fill those days up with lots of projects, lots of things that I want to get done. And that is one challenge as a father and as a husband is you tend to put the very, very important wife and children lower down in your priorities list. And that's always one of those things that as a father got to work on.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah. But at least on the farming side, I'm trying to get as much as possible my kids involved. I'll give you, for example, just a couple of nights ago, we got ourselves a dozen hens. So now we got egg-laying chickens at home, and now the kids are all excited, and they're actually asking me to go inside the coop and see the chickens more often than I actually want to. But it's okay. They're children. And
part of being a father.
Exactly. Exactly. And if I can pass on the interest, well, I might be able to figure out, okay, well, this one's a little bit more on the sanguine side, and he'll probably be more like me. You can show him all the things I'm interested in. That kid will probably follow me around like a little duckling follows a mama duck. And then the others will, hey, you want to come and help me feed the chickens? No, not interested. Those battles.
Yeah.
The little things in life, yeah. Everybody's going to be the same.
I think it's nice that you can bring your kids into your hobbies and your passions, because it doesn't feel like you're like you can do what you love, but it doesn't feel like it takes away from your family. It's like it becomes part of the family, dynamic. It makes me think of Jennifer Fulwell. I read a book like, I don't know, it was like a year and a half ago. What was it called? Jennifer Fulweiler's book.
One Beautiful Dream.
One Beautiful Dream. Okay, there we go. But she talks about how life can be, she has this like epiphany moment where she's like, oh, life can be an orchestration of events. So it's like bringing, it's not about taking away what I like or just totally just focusing on the kids, but it's like, how do I make it all work in a way that's balanced and beautiful? And I like that because, I mean, both Gary and I have hobbies and we've talked about that before. Like we feel like it's important to have it, you know, mm-hmm. and it benefits our, we really feel like it benefits our kids too. And, it's hard to find, like, I know what you mean by priorities. Cause like some days it's like, I wish I could just step away from everything and just do writing, you know, like just do intellectual work. Like that would be like my, fun moment. But then it's like, okay, I don't know. I've done that before. And then all of a sudden my life feels kind of purposeless. Like why am I doing this? What's the meaning of it? Like, it's almost like disconnected. If I do my hobbies disconnected from my family, I lose sense of purpose. But if I do it like within my family life, I only have an hour, say it, like I do it within the block time and I put my family as a priority. Then everything kind of flows a little bit better. I feel a little bit more at peace and I know that I have my, priority straight. And it's like, it feels good because like I'm finding that time for the things that I love, but then I know that I'm also meeting the duties that I have. So I think, I like what she said about that orchestration of events. Like, and if I can bring, like, I don't know, we were talking about different things we love. Like, I love nature, like bringing kids out into nature. And it gives me a perk too. It's like, I'm not just doing it for them. I'm also doing it for myself. And sometimes we're watching TV, like lately because of the COVID-19 situation, we've been like watching YouTube and like, sometimes it's like, no, mommy's choice today. Like we're going to go to visit a virtual museum because I like that. And you guys are going to learn to like it too because I like it. So I think it's like Jordan Peterson says, it's like we raise our kids not just to be like regular human beings. We raise them to be people that we like, you know?
Yeah.
So teach them to do the things that we like, teach them to be interested in the things that we like, teach them to speak the languages that we love. I think that's the benefit of the sanguine because like they don't, it feels like for me, like a sanguine never forgets that. Sanguine never forgets what's fun about being with kids. You know what I mean? Like it's kind of like that childhood curiosity, a childhood sense of like free time, care, like
play.
Yeah. Play. That's it. Do you want to talk about that, Gary?
Do I put
you on the spot? I just feel like I'm talking too much. But I like that sense of playfulness. Like so a couple of the adjectives I pulled out for the book were fun loving, relationship oriented, optimistic. Those qualities that everybody loves a sanguine for, I would say. Like how do you feel like that plays, say, like in the day to day raising kids? Even through the tough moments, say, like, how do you keep that going? I'm going to throw that question out there.
It's a good one.
It is a good one. I think, at least in my experience, it's been, just a willingness to want to play with the kids. Like, yeah, let's wrestle, let's horseplay, I'll chase around, tickle you, pretend to be a monster. And at the same time, like to a certain degree of willingness to like, okay, like let's do something that you guys like to do. So like with Ansgar's read books, with Rydar, it'll just be more like lie down on the floor and play cars. And a willingness to do that to a certain point. Like, man, Ansgar, if Ansgar had his way, we'd read him books all day without a break.
Mm-hmm. We call it the tyranny of the book.
Yeah.
It's real.
So, I think it's just willingness to engage and just wanting to, I don't know, I think for me it's like if the boys are being monsters, not in a playful way, and I have, it's my job to correct them, and then they start crying and getting upset. I don't know, my natural instinct is to want to like, you know, don't worry, like it, like to try to repair the relationship quickly and not just leave it at like, you're in a timeout.
Yep.
You're a bad kid. Like, and then just walk away. Like it, for me, it's like, I, just it comes easily to like, okay, you know, I want to give you a hug now. I love you. Next time, don't punch your brother in the face.
Or you in the face.
Yeah, or me. Mm-hmm. Like, you know.
Yeah.
Boys.
Yeah, boys, exactly. You know, definitely the sanguine part does definitely help me be closer to the kids and not play exactly. I do have, however, some projects that definitely just involves me being in front of the computer for a quick little thing, and it just always seems to be at that very moment that one of the kids asks Papa for something, and that is one of the aspects of this personality that we got that maybe can create some less than stellar moments, and definitely have as fathers to really just put ourselves desires aside. And we know that, yeah, the document's still going to be available for me to write on it in 30 seconds after the kids have gotten their glass of water. Or, you know, yes, I can find that little piece of that super tiny Lego piece that I haven't seen in 3 weeks. And the Lego pile of Legos, yes, I can definitely do that for you.
That has suddenly become life or death to that child.
Oh, I know. It is. It's crazy. I'm just so lucky to have a very organized wife who, once a week, it seems, she goes through the whole. We have a little stand on wheels with, I don't know, six drawers. Yeah, and she organizes all the Legos by size. Or by the what they do, you know, the flat ones, the long ones, or the 2x4s, or the super long ones, or the super tiny ones. They're all organized.
And so what's your sanguine approach to organizing Lego?
Just put it in a pile. Leave it. Just make sure I don't step on it when I'm going to bed at 10 p.m.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The floor is the best bucket.
Exactly. The toys in the way, just kick them. Definitely.
Yeah.
And, oh, yeah, that's another thing, too. It's not on the father part, but on the husband part, too. It's usually on my side of the bed that piles up the books on the floor. Definitely more than on Mariosa's side, for sure.
How do you respond to the organizing? Like, do you go along with it? Do you like it? Or does it, like, irritate you as a sanguine person to have your stuff, like, super organized or even organized?
It's really weird. Sometimes I will drag my feet as long as I can. especially those as I aforementioned, piles of books, and magazines and newspapers. Even though I read them, I'll just pile them up and I'll wait till it's a nice big pile before I deal with it. But then at the same time, I have these moments where it's like a click in my head. It's like, oh, I gotta clean. And I'm going to do a quick rush to the point where I'm just in the zone. And it's my new pet project of the moment, right? And then Marion, she sees me do that. It's like, well, what's going on? Is the house too dirty for you? Like, why are you cleaning? Why do you look like you're so in? Like, I don't really have a reason. I just decided this very moment that I wanted to clean. And then that's funny. It's kind of like a, I don't know, probably not the right word, but trance. You're in your zone. And then as soon as you get questioned by the, like, why are you in the zone? Why are you cleaning? And, oh, I don't want to clean anymore.
It's this weird out of body experience.
I know. And I don't know. Do you have that too? Am I going crazy or?
No, I think I have that. Okay. I'm not naturally very organized at all. growing up, I shared a room with my brother, who is very melancholic. Like, his bed looked like it would pass any military inspection on the planet. Like you could perform surgery on that side of the room. It was like pristine. My side of the room for like basically from the time we moved in to the time I moved out, was like, you couldn't see the floor. It was just a disaster. Mm. And I guess not much changed until I got married. But yeah, like every so often I'll go on a, it's like, I should probably tidy up and then just like make everything spotless.
Yeah. And it's sudden and unexplained where it comes from.
And then like you kind of snap out or I finish it and it's like, hey, you know, I have to do something else. And then, you know, a year will go by and it's like, hey, yeah, I should clean again.
Yeah. Jocelyn?
Gare had an apartment.
Oh, no.
And he didn't clean it for 2 years. It made him sick.
It was tidy. Like, you know, you could see the floor in spots. So
Gare, you slept on a couch. Like, you had no
standards. I had clean laundry. Like, I cleaned my laundry. I cleaned my kitchen. It was just, you know.
He had more bikes than space.
Priorities.
Exactly.
It's like I'm a single man. Like I, when I sleep, I only take up this, you know, small little strip. But you know, I have so much more space to actually do things.
Yeah. When I was in Manitoba, I had the aquarium and in the living room, which was spotless, but you know, still living and sleeping on an air mattress in my bedroom.
Yeah, priorities.
with a little tiny palm tree. That was the only two things that I had.
Priorities.
You're living in northern Manitoba. You were in denial, obviously.
Yeah, well, for sure.
I'll leave soon. I'm prepared. I have my palm tree in my inflatable mattress.
My subconscious thinks I'm in Tahiti.
I think I remember Miro's telling me about that when she arrived. She's like, you don't have a real bed. Where's your stuff?
I think after the first visit to Manitoba that she did, I think that's when I got myself a dresser. I think.
Moving up in the world.
Exactly.
The crazy things we do for love, right?
Yeah.
I threw out all of Gerhard's booze bottles that he had as a prize collection on the top shelf of his room. I was like, yeah, that's not coming with us.
And they were all like unique bottles that were like limited editions from the LCBO, from like breweries around Europe, not just like 1800 things of like Molson Canadian. So
no.
My defense.
I believe I still have a small metallic can of 7-Up from my trip to Dubai in 2004. It's all written in Arabic on the can. I think I still have it in a box.
Did you drink it or is it?
Oh, yeah, I drank it. But I mean, like it's empty. I just laying empty in a box somewhere in my basement. It resurfaced recently, and I was like, why do you need this? He's like, what is this for? Like, I don't know.
Throw it out, though.
It's a 7-Up can from Dubai. Why not?
Yeah, I had some fun throwing out
a little too much fun.
Gare's stuff.
Yeah, there's maniacal laughter coming out of the room.
It's just like, yes. There's such a feeling of satisfaction when I clean things and I organize things. And actually, like, I think, Gare, like, you've started to fall into, like, my rhythm, I feel, a little bit. But once in a while, like, it'll be like, why is there clothes all over the bathroom? Like, it doesn't even make any sense. Like, there's a basket in the bathroom to account for the fact that Gare leaves clothes in the bathroom. But, like, it doesn't make it to the basket. It's just, it's on the floor beside the basket. Anyway.
Takes too much effort.
It's funny, my grandparents' house, they had, it was really, really funky. Inside their closet, they had a hole just for chucking all their dirty clothes down right into their laundry room in the basement. And that's like the one thing that I remember from that house. I would say, one day I'm going to build a house that has that. And like, oh yeah, what do you want, Adrian? What do you want to put in your house when you build one? Like, I want a laundry chute.
Yeah, it doesn't help Gerhard that much because there's a laundry chute in this house. And
so the arrangement I have right now is I leave my laundry in places and then magical fairies come and clean it up later.
I'd like to meet
that's a good arrangement.
Yeah, it works well. Like, I don't have to think about it. It just gets done.
Although I have to say, Gerhard does laundry. So, like, as a caveat, once in a while, you do the laundry and you fold it and you clean it and you do laundry. So it's not that bad. But
magical fairies are amazing.
They sure are.
Now on Amazon.
They'll be late, though.
Yeah.
No Prime on at this time of the year.
No.
Now, since you're both sanguine, this conversation will go on forever. So maybe I should step in and stop it. I should say that was like probably going to one of the defining characteristics of the sanguine. You cannot pull them out of a social situation. we're always the last one at the party. But anyway, before we get onto that tangent, it's getting late. So
yeah.
But anyway, it was great. It's great having you on, Adrian, and having your perspective.
Yeah, and any last thoughts or ideas on the whole, like how the sanguine knowing your temperament has improved your life or marriage or.
As someone sanguine, you don't really think of what really that deeply about your temperaments. You just kind of go out there and do it, and definitely going through the motions of the book and reading about it. And like I mentioned earlier, kind of having these little, from time to time, revisiting what the temperaments are. And from that very book, what are the recommended ways to have a more harmonious lifestyle when you have a sanguine with a melancholic or a sanguine with a choleric or, you know, so on and so forth. Definitely for us sanguine men, it definitely is a huge resource for sure. Because like I said, sometimes you just need to be brought back to base and say, hey, remember this?
This is important.
Yeah.
So.
But thanks. So it was just a really nice conversation with you guys. Really
appreciate it. Thanks for coming on with us. And hopefully we can have, maybe once this pandemic's over and we don't have to be going through the internet, maybe we can, do a conversation with you and Mary Rose and we can talk about temperament combinations in marriage. Thanks. Get the other side of the story.
Maybe we should do it like face to face with a barbecue.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
There you go. A couple drinks, you know, really get the conversation going.
Some 7-Ups from Dubai.
Yeah, there you go.
It's a plan.
You get the
7-Ups. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Have a good night, dude.
Yeah, have a good night, dude. All
right. Yeah. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us for this episode on The Sanguine Husband.
We hope that you've picked up some practical tips that can help you in your marriage and your family. If you have any questions or comments, you can reach us at gnjshow.com.
If you've enjoyed our podcast, please rate and review us on the podcast app you're using to listen to us right now. This will help us to reach new audiences.
Once again, I'm Gerhard.
And I'm Joss, and you're listening to The G&J Show.
Until next time, keep smiling.